From Washington, VOA presents Issues in the News.
Welcome to Issues in the News. On the panel this week, Tracy Wilkinson, correspondent for Los Angeles Times, and Richard LaTendresse, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle. Our moderator is columnist for USA Today and West Wing Reports, Paul Brandes.
Hello, thank you for joining us, and here are the issues. The U.S. and China hit each other with new tariffs. There's talk of war between the United States and Iran. The U.S. Secretary of State visits Russia. And here in the U.S., two controversial issues, immigration and abortion, heat up once again. Well, let's start with trade. The world's two biggest economies, of course, are the United States and China. And they've been talking for many months now about a major trade deal that would cover a whole bunch of things. And we've been told, I'll start with you, Tracy, we've been told that we were close to a deal, that one was forthcoming. There now appears to have been quite a major setback, and both sides, in fact, have hit each other with new tariffs. What's going on?
Yes, well, it did seem they were coming to an agreement, and then kind of at the last minute, the United States accused Beijing of reneging on several of the deals or agreements that had been made thus far. And so to punish them for that, the United States slapped more than double tariffs from 10 to 25% on an estimated $200 billion in products that are imported from China. China then retaliated with tariffs of its own on about 5,000 different products, from agricultural stuff, soybeans, et cetera, to metals and chemicals and fabrics. So that's where it stands now. The two sides continue to talk, although there doesn't seem to be a lot of progress. Trump and Xi are scheduled to meet next month. So it may be that that has to happen before anything is resolved.
Now, Richard, President Trump is always talking about how tariffs are good because he seems to think that the Chinese are paying, but economists, in fact, and corporation after corporation here in the U.S. say actually that is not true. Who is actually paying the cost, bearing the burden of these tariffs?
At this very moment, it's the U.S. firms and the U.S. consumers who are paying for the tariffs that have been added, increased on Chinese imports here in the United States. The president keep on insisting on this aspect, and he presents himself proudly as a tariff man, considering that in the end, it forces the other economies to rethink the way they trade with the United States, whatever the impact, short-term impact on the American society. And so that's why, as Tracy underlined, when you go through the impact on U.S. farmers of these tariffs, we have to, the U.S. government has to find money to support the U.S. farmers from the other side because of the tariffs hitting them with the new...
In other words, a bailout.
In other words, it's a bailout at the moment. But the president keeps on repeating that they will be the ones benefiting most once a new trade deal, a major trade deal, will have been signed with China, which might take a long time because considering what happened in the negotiations and the aspects that are discussed, the intellectual property theft, as the president says, forced technology transfer, they are at the heart of the way China is building its own industry. So it's hard to imagine how China is going to change its habits.
Anybody who wants to answer this one, you know, the president always focuses on tariffs, on the trade deficit, rather, like that's the principal issue. But to Richard's point, these underlying issues like cyber hacking, protection of intellectual property, forced transfer of technology when American and foreign companies go to China. These are huge issues, and yet the president seems to talk mostly about the trade deficit. Is that really the right focus in your view?
No, I think he needs to have a much broader focus. It's kind of surprising that a Republican president is taking such a protectionist tack. And as Richard said, Trump doesn't seem to fundamentally understand, or at least he doesn't express understanding of the fact that it is the consumer that that suffers. Farmers are saying they'd rather produce and sell than be bailed out. So no, I don't think this is the right approach. Trump seems very confident of his ability to negotiate, and that he's going down the right path. The question will be whether the farmers can survive that long. But yes, to the other issues, cyber, intellectual property, all of these are issues that are kind of at the backdrop of all of this. And it leads us to the Huawei issue, where the United States is also moving to make it very difficult, if not impossible, for American companies to deal with this huge Chinese tech firm, on the idea that it gives the Chinese an inroad into American intelligence and know-how. So that's a separate issue, or part of the whole thing. I mean, what you have going on here really is the two largest economies, as you said, sort of jostling for global influence and power. So that's the backdrop here. And it will be interesting to see how much of that can be resolved through simple, not so simple, but complex trade agreements.
I mean, it's worth noting, I read a study recently by two very influential people, former head of the National Security Agency and the former commander of all U.S. naval forces in the Pacific, and they wrote this article saying just how big this issue is in terms of thievery of intellectual property. They priced it, their estimate, at in U.S. terms, about $600 billion a year. I'm not sure how they broke that down, but that's the figure that they came up with. And they said, in their words, it's the biggest transfer of wealth in human history. That's a lot bigger issue than simply these, you know, deficits that the president keeps talking about. That. So to your point, I think that that's right. Well, let's move on here. The Trump administration recently dispatched an aircraft carrier and bombers to the Middle East and is now said to be considering something upwards of 120,000 American troops there as well, all meant apparently to send a signal to Iran. It's interesting that these tensions with Iran there've always been tensions, but they really seem to have just ratcheted up rather dramatically in the past couple of weeks or so. Richard, what's going on here?
Well, we know that this administration has always had something with Iran. There was always a view of the regime and tensions from the start, and considering the fact and the habit that the president has developed of going back on what his predecessor, Barack Obama, has signed, has agreed all over the world, well, the JCPOA, the agreement on the Iranian nuclear program that was signed by European powers, Iran, and the United States, he backed up from this agreement. So that was the very start of disagreeing. And at this moment, of course, again, Iran is definitely not an angel in the Middle East. We know the influence it's had in Syria and the conflict over there, supporting the regime of Bashar al-Assad. In Yemen, supporting the Houthis. They're influential in Lebanon. And so Iran is definitely developing its influence in the region. The U.S. tries to contain this because Israel and Saudi Arabia see Iran as a major threat. And what's interesting in the last days is this idea that suddenly, according to military and intelligence officials, Iran is threatening U.S. troops in the region, so we need this military buildup. It's not exactly what we hear from our allies in the region, not the Arabs, but the Europeans having troops in the region. They do not give us the same feedback on the type of threat Iran poses to foreign or Western troops in the area.
Tracy, let's take a step back for a second. In years past, talk about strange bedfellows. Israel and Saudi Arabia don't agree on much, but they have both urged the United States for a long time to attack Iran. They asked George W. Bush. He said no. They asked Barack Obama. He said no. Now they seem to want President Trump to do that. Have they found a more willing president to hear that message?
Yes and no. Certainly a more willing president to hear the message and to entertain the thought. But at the same time, President Trump has been clear about not wanting to get American troops more deeply involved in foreign adventures, foreign endeavors. So, you know, he said he wants the U.S. troops out of Syria, U.S. troops out of Afghanistan, so it's hard to see him sending 100,000 troops into the Middle East now. He denied a report that he was planning that, but also said he would be willing to do that if necessary, and even more. So he's very receptive to Israel and to Saudi Arabia. They are his best friends. So he's certainly willing to hear the talk. I think at this point they're hoping that threats will be enough to contain Iran and to make Iran step down. They talk about, as Richard said, that Iran is threatening U.S. troops, but provide no evidence. And history has shown that you need to be very careful when the United States claims to have intelligence about what foreign powers are doing and not provide any proof. So that's where we are now. It seems like they are hoping that things will calm down for the time being. President Trump has backed off a little bit from some of the more bellicose rhetoric, but he definitely has, both Saudi Arabia and Israel definitely have a receptive ear at the White House now.
I was just going to say, a noticeable aspect also, Tracy, in the White House, when you look and you listen to the president, there is the, of course, he's surrounded by notably John Bolton, his national security advisor, who's never seen a conflict where he didn't think the U.S. Military couldn't have intervened in a positive way. But the main thing is that the president would like so much a phone call from Ayatollah Ali Khamenei saying, let's deal something. He keeps repeating, they just need to call me. He writes in his tweets. So the president keeps on pushing for his personalized diplomacy, but the maximum pressure that he can apply through the military might of the United States is probably a way for him to say, you see, I could use this way, but give me a call and we'll find a way to solve this issue.
It sounds like he just wants attention or something. And to come back to one earlier point that you made, this 2015 agreement between Iran and these six world powers, the so-called P5 plus one agreement. The other five countries in that agreement, the Britain, Germany, France, the Chinese, and of course, Iran's good friends, the Russians, all think that the agreement is working. President Trump is kind of on his own here in backing out of that. I'm not quite sure what kind of international support he would even have, Tracy, if he were to entertain the military option.
Right, that's his problem. He has lost credibility and he's lost friends because he did pull out of that agreement. And the United Nations also says that agreement has been working. So he has actually gotten rid of a platform for potential dialogue that he would have had and for potential coalition building.
Okay, well, let's pause for a short break. More issues in the news in just a moment.
Issues in the News is coming to you on the Voice of America in Washington. If you'd like to download the program, it's free on iTunes. Just click on the iTunes tab on our website at voanews.com. While you're there, check out our other programs, Press Conference USA and Encounter. You can also visit us on Facebook, then like us at Current Affairs with Carol Castiel. Now back to our panel. Tracy Wilkinson, correspondent for Los Angeles Times, and Richard Lottendress, correspondent for TVA Nouvelle. Our moderator is columnist for USA Today and West Wing Reports, Paul Brandes.
Welcome back. Mike Pompeo, he's the American Secretary of State. He visited Russia recently, where he met with President Vladimir Putin, also Sergei Lavrov, the Russian foreign minister. You know, Tracy, the Washington and Moscow both say they want better relations, maybe to use an old Obama-era term, maybe a reset, maybe in the offing. But things still seem awfully chilly between these two countries.
It's kind of an interesting contrast. On the one hand, you have President Trump, who seems very friendly towards President Vladimir Putin. But on the other hand, the actual U.S. government, the administration, has very tense relationships with Moscow. In fact, 2 days after Pompeo returned from that trip, the United States put more sanctions on Russian figures over human rights atrocities. So it's a difficult relationship right now. They disagree on many things: Syria, Iran, Venezuela. And Pompeo brought up some of those things, standing next to both Putin and to Lavrov. What he didn't bring up, at least publicly until asked, was election meddling, which is another key point of difference that this administration doesn't seem to want to give as much emphasis to. But yeah, there's not a lot of basis there, it would seem, for better relationships except Trump's friendship with Putin.
Well, let's talk about some of these tension points briefly, Richard. Iran, for example, we mentioned earlier that Russia and Iran are actually quite close. They have defense ties, economic ties, and so forth. Just to come back to Iran briefly, I mean, how would that relationship impact anything that the U.S. may choose to do in that region?
Well, it brings us back to the concept of isolating Iran. The administration can try different ways to put pressure on the Tehran and try to break the regime. But at this very moment, the United States, as a major power, is the only one doing it. We were talking about the European behavior towards the JCPOA, the agreement on the Iranian nuclear program. They're not with the United States. And Russia, as a middle power, not a medium power, it's not anymore the super power that it used to be, still has a major role to play. So the main aspect, Paul, that we keep seeing in this is that the will to isolate Iran is not working. Russia is right there to keep on supporting the regime.
Okay, and the next tension point is Venezuela, of course, right in America's backyard, and yet it appears like Putin actually appears to have perhaps the upper hand here. The U.S. wants Nicolas Maduro to go. He won't. Putin is actually telling the U.S. rather explicitly, I think, to sort of mind your own business. This is our guy.
But somebody fundamentally misjudged the situation in Venezuela, because the Americans were so sure that the pressure and the recognition of Juan Guaido, the president of the National Assembly, as the official new interim president would be enough for the entire situation to change. Nicolas Maduro is still in power, has still the support of the army, and Russia is just there as, again, making sure that the regime stays in place and not necessarily putting thousands of troops and investing billions of dollars, just being there. So again, the mistake, Russia is a player obviously in there, just like Cuba and China are, but the Americans misjudge, obviously, the situation. So it's easier for Putin to say, well, we're just there as a friend and not a major country involved in this crisis.
Yeah, I think some Venezuelan exiles and a few Republican Florida politicians sold a bill of goods to the White House on this one. And I think Trump might have been persuaded that action in Venezuela would help his 2020 chances in Florida. So I think there were some, as Richard said, big misjudgment.
It's kind of a broader question about Russia. Richard was saying that Russia is not the superpower that it used to be, and in economic terms, it has the economy equal to the American state of Florida, which is, for a country of, 140 million people, it's quite remarkable. And yet on the world stage, Tracy, the Russians seem to be punching well above their weight. How do they get away with that?
Well, some of their tactics aren't exactly kosher. They can be subversive and they can be secretive and do a lot of things that, in theory, the United States would outlaw. And at the same time, you have a United States that has withdrawn from many parts of the world. And so, naturally, Russia and also China are going to step into that void, and they're eager and quick to do it.
Well, here at home, the 2020 election season is well underway, even though the election is still a year and a half off. And President Trump this week seems like everything he is doing is geared towards his reelection. That's understandable. And he unveiled an immigration plan. One of the big ideas is, and we've heard this in years past, but one of his ideas is that prospective immigrants to this country should be judged not so much on family ties, but on the job skills, the education they bring to the table. Democrats say this plan is dead on arrival, not going anywhere.
Well, it's interesting because the president is putting forward the system that's been, for instance, adopted in my home country of Canada. And it's a merit-based system. It's very simple. We go with qualifications and employability. It's a simple system with points. It sounds perfectly logical. The reality is that it's a different tradition here in the United States, and the Democrats can easily put forward a different perspective on what has been the way things have been going in the U.S. We know that this is the topic that inflames his supporters spontaneously. How do we fight illegal immigration? And within the Republican Party, there's a good numbers of elected officials who would even like to limit the number of legal immigrants. So on the Democratic side, it's not looking good. And even within his own Republican Party, people are not enthusiastic. So I can't hardly see how this is going to work out, even if, theoretically, it works out, it could work out well.
The thing that's puzzling, Tracy, is that you know, these Republicans and Democrats, they both can't seem to agree on anything. And yet, if you look at the polling and the data behind it, most Americans in general agree on the same things. Everybody seems to want better border security. Every country has a right to control its borders, things like that. And people do want a crackdown on undocumented immigrants. Both sides do that. The dispute, obviously, is how to get there and solve these issues. Are they ever going to be able to bridge their gaps?
No, I don't think so. It seems like each side always wants to add something to the mix that the other side can't accept. In this particular case, the plan that the president presented does nothing for the so-called DACA people, the immigrants who were brought here as children illegally and have grown up and you know, gone to American schools and are working in American jobs.
Contributing to the economy.
Contributing, paying taxes, all of these things, and they would be deported if Trump had his way. But this plan doesn't even deal with that. And that's a big issue for the Democrats. So there was a compromise years ago, but in this day of polarized politics, I'm not sure they will ever come to an agreement.
Well, in our final minutes here, this other big issue that has cropped up, the state of Alabama, which is in the southern portion of the United States, recently passed what has been described as the most restrictive abortion law in the country. Essentially, no abortions for any reason whatsoever, incest or rape or, I mean, nothing whatsoever. Very controversial. And this is a Republican bill signed by a Republican governor. And some of the lawmakers down there say, well, we now think with the U.S. Supreme Court tilted to the right, we now have an opportunity to influence even Roe versus Wade, which is the national law that supports abortion rights dating back to 1973. Is Roe v. Wade in trouble here?
I think it may be. What Alabama has done is part of a broader campaign by several states to come up with a very restrictive abortion law that will be challenged in court and inevitably end up in the Supreme Court, where President Trump has been able to appoint two conservative justices in the last couple of years. And so these anti-abortion people believe they have now the votes on their side to overturn Roe v. Wade. Now, it's unclear how quickly they would overturn Roe v. Wade, but it is definitely a measure that is in danger. Even some national Republicans, however, believe the Alabama law may have gone too far in that it is so restrictive that it won't pass court muster at all.
And just from a health perspective, Richard, they can pass all the laws they want, but women are going to get impregnated by men no matter what the law is, and women are going to seek out abortions in some way or form, regardless of whether there's a law or not. It's you can't dispute that.
No, and that's why it's very much perceived as a to a certain extent, a law against women and women freedom of doing what they want with their body. It's a woman's choice, you know. And so as much as you can have a spiritual perspective on life and you can look at this as a dynamic of fighting for life before anything, in the end, the consequences are going to be supported by women who are going to find ways to have an abortion. For me as a Canadian, where the issue has been pretty much resolved, or, you know, we more or less agree on what to do with this, I think the good thing in all this is it forces everyone to rethink their attitude, take nothing for granted. I mean, we have to together think again, and you see states where they reaffirm the right to have the choice to decide what you want to do with your pregnancy.
And quite quickly, one of the criticisms about the people who passed this law is that if you say that human life is sacred and we want to eliminate unplanned pregnancies, then why cut funding for things like Planned Parenthood, which helps provide contraception and that kind of thing. So a little bit of a disconnect there in terms of what they're doing.
A bit of hypocrisy.
Yeah. All right. We'll have to end it right there. Our thanks to two of Washington's most prominent journalists, Tracy Wilkinson. She's with the Los Angeles Times, and Richard LaTendresse. He's with Canada's TVA Nouvelle. This program was produced by Patrice Martin, our engineer, Justin Thwaites, and I'm Paul Brandis of USA Today and West Wing Reports. Thank you for joining us.